Ladies and gentlemen, this is the final pairing in the United States Open Championship. The players are Jack Nicklaus of North Palm Beach, Florida, and Chris Mascaro of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mr. Mascaro has the honor. Play away, please.
How great is that? That never gets old for me. And now with the U.S. Open coming up here in a couple weeks, going to be back home in Pittsburgh. If you're going to be up there for the U.S. Open, going to check it out at Oakmont. I'm going to be on property there at least on Wednesday. Then on Thursday, Friday, I'll be at the Pittsburgh Brewing Company at their tap room. I'll be recording interviews. It looks like I'm going to be out there from 4 to 6 p.m. both days. So if you're anywhere near the area, please stop by and say hello. Folks, thank you so much for pressing play on this week's episode. It is part two of episode number 25 featuring my Goomba, Rob Strano, and Dr. Bob Winters. Rob has a great new facility down there around Destin, Florida. Just had the grand opening back on June the 2nd. So if you're anywhere near Destin, Florida, you need to go check out what Rob has going on over there. Also, while you're there, say hello to our good friend Courtney Weber, who is doing great things and is part of Rob's staff down there. If you're looking to exercise, get in shape, lose weight, and all that sort of thing, Rob marries all of that together with he and Courtney there. Folks, when you're thinking about what you want to do with your golf game, we try to put the whole package together for you each and every week here on Next on the Tee, because Rob, like I say, he's going to help you get better. We're also going to go back into his time out on the PGA Tour. Rob was a PGA Tour player. We're going to talk about his career, the Euchre effect, which I think he grossly undersells what he was able to achieve on the PGA Tour. Look, just to get out there, you got to be in the 1% of the 1%ers, right? Rob did that. So you're going to hear a little bit about that story and how he got along out there on tour and then what he learned and took from that. And then, as you guys know, Dr. Bob Winters, the confidence doctor, he joins me every month. We talk about the mental side of the game here a lot. We're going to do that again tonight. You'll hear that from Dr. Bob. He's got some wonderful players in the Women's U.S. Open. He's got some wonderful players out on the Junior Tour that are achieving great things. You'll learn who, how, and why when Doc joins me in segment four of this week's show. So folks, as I always say, thank you so much for coming back and tuning in and taking the journey with me. So you know what? Just like we do every single week here on the show, we're going to take you behind the scenes. We're going to let you know about some things, tell you some stories. We're also going to make you feel better about yourself and your golf game, maybe teach you a tip or two. So sit back, relax, let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next hour or so. But before we get started, I want to start off by reminding you about our wonderful friends over at 2Under. 2Under men's performance briefs are the unofficial underwear of the PGA, Ryder Cup, and President's Cup teams, and are sold in over 3,000 golf pro shops and golf specialty retailers nationwide. Ricky Fowler is their global ambassador, and over 50 other PGA, Korn Ferry, and Champions Tour players wear them. Just to mention a few, they are David Toms, Jerry Kelly, Justin Thomas, William McGirt, Scott McCarron, and Chris DeMarco. The Joey Pouch technology provides the ultimate male asset management, delivering maximum comfort from the tee box to the boardroom to the bedroom. Go to 2under.com to check out the bundle specials that offer substantial discounts for being a Next on the Tee listener. That's the number 2under.com. 2Under, performance in your pants. I also want to remind you about our wonderful friends over at Squares Golf. Before I bring them into the show, let's talk about our friends over at Squares Golf. And folks, do you sway and you're off balance in your golf swing? You know what? It could be your shoes. A golf shoe needs structure to provide stability and reduce sway. How can you tell if your shoes lack structure and are hurting your game? If you can hold your shoes by the toe and heel and twist it, toss it. Squares was designed for the perfect balance of structure and comfort. Isn't it time you tried Squares? Try the new Speedbolt at squares.com. That's squairz.com.
Sure, this is golf, but so is this. And this. And this is definitely golf. And so is this. Hey, that's not golf. Oh, wait, yeah, it is. And no matter what your golf is, you're going to need a store. No, a superstore. A place to get fit for a new club and walk out with it the same day. A place to find the perfect fit. A place to do whatever this is. Because this is golf. And this is golf's superstore.
Okay, now back and next on the tee with me is another one of the all-time great instructors in our game, and my Goomba, Rob Strano. As you know, Rob hosted the Golf Kingdom TV show for several years. I hate that it's no longer on the air because of the innovative ways that Rob helped us improve our games and the really creative drills that he shared with us. You can still watch him on the show's YouTube channel. You can find Rob at his brand new Golf Academy down in Destin, Florida. Go check it out for yourself on his Instagram page at the Golf Kingdom. And I'm honored he is back with me again this week here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Robbie, how are you, my friend?
Hey, good to be with you, Chris. As always, a great and appreciated intro. And I was struggling tonight, actually, before coming on with you. I was thinking of usually we have some sort of creative banter to start the show, and I didn't have anything. And someone said to me, how about you just start the show normal? So, hey,
really?
Chris. Hi, it's Rob.
Hi, Rob.
Hi.
Okay.
Question.
Let me ask you a question. Yes. That's the challenge when you come on the show, because at some point I lose control of the show and it ends up being the Rob Strano show. So the tug of war without it at the beginning is going to be interesting. So let's see if we can't work our way through this thing.
Yeah, I have high hopes. So we'll see here. I'm in normal mode. So let us proceed.
All right, so I want to start off talking about your time playing out on the tour. You played out there for several years. Tell me, what are some interesting things from the time that you spent out there that people may not know about? You heard Mark Wiebe in the last segment talking a little about some things that maybe people aren't all that aware of. What were some things that happened out there for you out on tour that are huge in the game?
Well, you know, it's interesting. For years, I kind of eucharized my golf career. The legendary Bob Uecker, known for self-deprecating how actually a very fine catcher he was for my St. Louis Cardinals. And so I eucharized myself for a long time and really played down the fact, you know, I played a bunch of events, but I was never exempt. I never won at the big tour level, won some smaller stuff. But, you know, what's funny was you've got the guy out there on social media that's following the Monday qualifiers. And he's doing a great job of telling that story of what goes on Mondays. And I always say, I was a career Monday qualifier. I got in a ton of events via Monday qualifying. And a year and a half, 2 years ago, he made this comment on the feed. He said, you know, I've been following these Monday events, and it's pretty impressive for any of these guys to get through one of these things. And I went, well, I did that. And then he said this. He said, it's impressive if you get through. But if you win one of these, that is a whole another level of being a great player. And I went, wait a second, reevaluate this. My first PGA Tour event I played in, I won the Monday qualifier. It wasn't Korn Ferry or Nationwide or Nike or Buy.com at that time. I won the Monday qualifier. I started rethinking, that's pretty good, I guess. Maybe I was better than I thought I was, and it sent me down a journey of reanalyzing my career. So, for example, nobody knows this in the world of golf. Nobody knows this. I am part of a world record in competition on tour that will never be broken. It's parallel to Byron Nelson winning 18 events. It'll never be broken, Chris.
Okay.
Me, Kyle Thompson, and we believe Anthony Gonzalez was our third player. At a tour event, Monday qualifying event, on a legitimate par five. Okay, a par five, there's three of us. Three pars is 15 shots, right, Chris?
Indeed.
How many shots do we take as a group on a par five where we all hit wood into the green?
I'm saying you had a total of six strokes. You all double eagled it.
That would be really unbreakable. We had eight as a group. Eight.
Wow. Okay.
Kyle makes double eagle. And Anthony is 50 yards short of the green. He's walking back. I looked in the cup and I said, Kyle, here's your ball, because we couldn't find it. We thought it had gone over the green in the bunker. It was because it was an elevated green. I said, hey, nice double eagle. Your ball's in the hole. So I can still see it like it's happening. Anthony walks down and I look at him. And I go, cup must be big. Knock it in. He's got a little 50-yard pitch shot. He can't see the green. And he flips it up there, takes two bounces, checks, and rolls in the hole like a putt.
Wow.
No, I've got 20 feet from the fringe. I'm about 2 feet of the fringe, little right edge putt. And I remember looking at this going, if you miss this, you are the biggest moron ever in the history of golf. And I can still see it, Chris. I looked at it and I went, the only way I miss this is if I lose consciousness. And I,
wow, I from hit 20 feet up
and it, there was no way it was going to miss. It would have gone in a thimble. It was dead middle, rolled in, and we're walking in the next tee and Kyle's behind me and he catches me and he hits me with an elbow. And he says, how does it feel to make eagle and lose the tee? There was a short exchange after that that we just won't get into.
It's a family show.
Kyle was a buddy, but and a good guy. But you know, that's just part of my career that'll die with me. Nobody has a clue that that went on. I remember Michael Breed was talking, and Michael, a good friend, was talking about, you know, par five play and great par five play on tour on his show one day, and I sent him a quick text, you know, in the middle of the show saying, hey, you know, this is great par five play, and told him about it. And, you know, it was never brought up. And I've put it on social media before and no one picked it up. And it'll go down as a dead record that nobody knows about on a legitimate par five, a par five where you had to hit wood. There was no driver, 9 iron or 5 iron. It was a wood into the green.
What course was it at?
Smithfield in, I think it's in Greer, South Carolina. The ninth hole there, dogleg ride around a creek, trees, you play to a corner and you play up to an elevated green. It's about 530. And this is back in, what year would this have been? Like 2002, like April of 2002.
Huh. Wow. That's an amazing feat, to think. And I got to imagine when it gets down to you, I mean, you talk about it was destined to go in and what the negative self-talk you did to yourself lining it up. But there's a little bit of pressure on you at that point, right? To think that your buddies, one guy makes double eagle, the next guy makes eagle. You don't want to be the guy that just walks away, walks away with birdie.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I mean, like I said, I looked at it and went, oh my gosh, if you miss this, you are the biggest loser ever. I had a guy in my first year on tour hit a bad shot and he called himself a leper.
A leper. He
goes, you are such a leper. I'm like, look, I turned around and went, I've heard a lot of people call themselves names, but never that one. I didn't go to that level. I didn't go leper level if I was going to miss it. But I was like really in my head going, there's just no way. There's no option B here. Find a way to make it. I remember looking at it going, oh my gosh. It's one of those, sometimes you see it going in. And you just know it's going to go in and just boom and just made it. And then another one for my career was I got a sponsor's exemption into the first event of the year on what was the Nike tour. It was in San Jose. And I was living in Phoenix in time. So drove up first event of the year, Nike tour. And we had just horrible weather. We couldn't get any practice rounds in at Almaden Country Club. And if we putted, we had to wear street shoes because they had so much rain on the course. So we played Thursday, and I think I shot like 77 or something, nothing great. And the second round, we have a sleet delay. So the round stops in the middle of my front nine on the back nine because I've got a par putt and it looks like popcorn popping on the green as the sleet's falling. And I make the turn and I'm nowhere near the cut line. And 10's a par, or number one's a par five, my 10th hole. I hit a green side in the rough, get cute, dump it in the bunker and make bogey. And so I go to the second tee and I'm off the cut line and I'm going, what in the world are you doing? And I proceed to birdie 7 of the last 8 and almost come back and make the cut.
Nice run.
And the only one I missed was the 8th hole was a 4-iron par 3 over water to a funky, slopey green. And I hit a pretty good shot. I hit 4 under about 40 feet, pin high left, downhill, can still see it. Downhill, early left swing, and then a big right break. And when it turned right, it went downhill. And I looked at this putt, and I've made everything in a row. And I looked at this putt. I remember giggling. I go, this is going in two. And I hit it, Chris. And I look up, and it's about a third of the way, and it's where I thought it was going to be. And then it gets that little right bend and picks up a little speed, and I go, I just made it. And it got to the hole and hit the high edge and lipped out and went about a foot away.
No.
Can still see it. Unbelievable. And then nine's a par five. I hit it in two. Two putted from 20 feet. And I think it was one of the low nines that year on the Nike Tour. Because that was 30 on that nine. So a bogey and seven birdies.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice run.
Just silly. I mean, just silly things that happen to you in the midst of playing with no explanation.
Oh, when nothing's
going well, and just all of a sudden, boom, there's a hot streak, and you just take off. So, you know, overall, you know, like I said, I've reevaluated my career, and I'm amazed when I run into players that I don't think know me or remember me, and I reintroduce myself, and I go, "Oh yeah, I know who you are, or I remember you." And you know, I was just having a funny thought last week. You know, last week was the anniversary of the last episode of Cheers. And of course, George Wendt died, also the beloved character Norm. And my first PGA Tour event that I was just mentioning I won the qualifier for was the week after that Cheers episode at the Kemper Open in Washington, D.C. And we're in player dining. And I'm walking through the line. I'm talking to Peter Jacobson and Brad Faxon. And of course, Fax is a Northeastern guy. We're talking about the last episode of Cheers. And I said, "Did you catch what Sam did when he walked off set?" And they went, "No." I said, "Well, if you remember the final scene, you know, someone asks him if he's still open. He says, 'No, sorry, we're closed.' And as he starts to walk off stage right, he stops, looks at the back set wall, and walks back and straightens a picture of, I think it's Geronimo or Coach.
Yeah, I think it's Geronimo.
I forget which one it is. And walks off set. And if you didn't know Cheers history, that picture hung in the dressing room of Coach, the first bartender for the show that passed away in I think he passed away in year two. And they hung that picture on the back set wall in his memory. And it had been there through all the years. And it was kind of a tip of the cap to him in his memory when Sam walked off set and then adjusted the picture. So that's a memory from being on tour. That's kind of a fun one, you know, talking about that in player dining.
So, Rob, I want to take the theme here of you reevaluating your career just a step further, because you were part of the 1% of the 1% who make it all the way to qualifying and getting an opportunity to play in some tour events. So if you look back, right, I mean, to your point, you need to give yourself more credit for being at that level. What were the things that made you rise above everyone else to get to that level, to get the opportunities for those Monday qualifiers, to go on to win some of the Monday qualifiers and get to play on tour? Because I think you are selling yourself way short.
And that was part of my evaluation I did a couple of years ago. I went, why was I any good? And of course, if people have listened to your show out there and fans of the show have heard us before, they know my background going up in St. Louis at St. Clair Country Club with 68 Masters champion Bob Golby, Jay and Jerry Haas, and Frank Connor. There's five of us. We're all honorary members of the club, all have played the tour. There's no other course like it in the world. And Jerry Haas introduces me to his friends when I drop by Wake Forest and hang out with him every year as the guy I've played the most golf with in my entire life, which touches my heart because we're such good friends. And we were competitors against each other as kids and became good friends as professionals. And, you know, I looked at it and went, you know, I played a lot of golf growing up. We didn't hit balls. We were dropped off in the morning. We played all day, every day, hot, cold, wind, rain. And I learned the game. I learned how to play the game on a golf course that required you to learn how to play golf shots, not play golf swing. And I tell these kids I coach, get out there on the golf course and play, 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 play. Learn how to post a score when you don't hit it well. I play with a ton of guys on tour that if they hit one bad shot, Chris, it was over. The sky fell, it caved in, and it was over for them. And I would laugh. I'd get up there and I'd hit a driver in the neck and it'd, you know, wiggle out there on the fairway. And I'd put the club in the bag and just kind of giggle and go, well, that wasn't very good. I guess I got to hit 6 iron into this green instead of 7 now. And I'd get down there and analyze the next shot and play and play and play. And growing up with a putting green in my backyard, I learned short game. I learned how to putt. And so I always leaned into my short game. And I just knew I didn't have to hit it pure to shoot 70 or 69. I just knew I just had to play golf and not do anything dumb. And I prided myself on my strategy, my management of the game, my determination. And I'll never forget a funny story. Jerry Haas and I were, where were we? We were in Midland, Odessa. We were at the Permian Basin Open, and we were in a practice round having a chipping contest on the chipping green. And we had a little wager going. And on the last hole, I chipped it stiff to beat him, and I gave it a little fist pump. And he didn't like it at all. And he looked at me and he goes, "You really think you're that good, don't you?" He goes, "What color is the sky in your world?" I said, "Yeah, I am that good. And the sky is bright blue, pal." And he looked at me and then started laughing. And you know, we shared a good competitive moment there. But I had belief. I mean, when I played that first PGA Tour event, after winning the Monday qualifier, you know, I did the interview after winning the Monday, and the guy said, "Hey, good luck next week, make the cut." I turned and I looked at him and I went, "Not going up there to make the cut, going up there to win."
So let's take that a step further, Rob, because I had Gary Player on last week. And one of the things I talked to Mr. Player about was how Jack Nicklaus used to always say that a major championship was probably one of the easiest tournaments to win because there were only a handful of guys who thought they were capable of winning one. And I asked Mr. Player about that. I said, you know, this is what Mr. Nicklaus used to always say. Do you think he was right? And he said, yes, I think he was right. So to that end, when you talk about you had belief that you could go up there and win, how much of the game is believing that you can versus all the negative self-talk, the mental games that go into tubes? You talked about a moment ago, guy hits a bad shot, he goes right down the tubes. Talk about that impact and how that made a difference in your life.
Well, you know, we always use the word bulletproof. You have to feel like you're bulletproof, and nothing can knock you down. I mean, the game is hard. Winning on tour is incredibly hard. So many things have to fall your way, and you'll take a punch every day from this game, and you just got to get back up and get going. Get back up and get going. Every morning is a new morning to improve and get better. I was one of those guys. I love golf so much, still do, that when I went to practice and stuff, I just ran out of daylight. I could have kept going. I never remember being tired, hungry, thirsty, bored. I just ran out of daylight, would go home, reassess, get up the next morning, and get after it. And you have to have that belief, no matter what, that you are that good, that it's just around the corner if it's off, and you just keep working and grinding. And that's kind of how I felt about things. And I just had such good influences in Mr. Golby and Jay Haas. And you know, Jay's been a guest on your show, and I just loved listening to Jay talk, whether it's on your show or talking to him, the opportunities I have, and just hear him talk about just the common sense and determination and stick-to-itiveness you have to have as a player. And that's just kind of how I was. I just loved working on it and kept going. And, you know, I always say, you can spot a player by if they have the big moment gene. In the big moments, do they step through or do they step back? And some players can never find that, and they're just good players. Some players have it. Some players learn it. I was just lucky enough that if I got in the moment, I really didn't spit many opportunities up. You know, everybody will throw up every once in a while and give one away. Usually when I was around it, I hung in there. You didn't watch me do something and go, "Well, that was a choke." Well, you just, you know, you spit the bit on that one. I never felt like, other than one or two times, I looked back and went, "Boy, did I just screw the pooch on that one? That wasn't very good."
I love the fact that, you know, the positive mindset. You know, championship teams typically, like in football, talk about how, you know, they didn't really lose the game. The clock just ran out on them. And it's just always keeping that positive mindset that you can do it, that you are the best, that you are going to get it done. I think that is the difference between guys that are perennial second place finishers or somewhere in the top 10, backdoor top 10 players versus the guys that are out there winning major championships season in and season out. You just know, you know, I played my best. I did my best. I just ran out of holes. And I think that's what I hear in what you're saying.
Yeah. And that's a great saying I've had in my back pocket for a long time is I just ran out of holes before I figured it out or I ran out of holes before I got there. You know, it's funny is I made it through a lot of Monday qualifiers, but I was also in a lot of playoffs too. And I can remember just grinding and grinding and grinding. And it's just, you're just nibbling around one or two under. And I bet there were probably no less than five times where I birdied the last hole. And I remember once again thinking to myself, well, that just got me in a playoff. Not that got me in, that got me in a playoff. And sure enough, I'd be in a playoff. And one of the best playoffs I was ever in was in New Mexico, where they played the event in Albuquerque. And there was a guy from Wake Forest out there, Barry Fabian was his name. Great guy. I'd had dinner with him before. Went to, you know, like I said, Wake Forest. So, you know, knew Jerry Haas, the whole deal. And Barry was a great guy. We weren't strangers to each other, let's put it that way. So we get in this playoff, and this playoff goes four holes, okay? And Barry needs to get in one more event to get his full status on that tour. One more event, okay? And so we get in this playoff, goes four holes, and he needs like $500. He needs to get in, make a cut, and he's got full status. We go four holes, and on the third playoff hole, he hits this putt from above the flag from like 20 feet that goes like, I don't know, 5-6 feet by. And I've got it pin high, like 10 feet for birdie, really slick. And I go, you know what? Let this ball just fade in there. If it falls in, it falls in. But don't get crazy, because if it gets going a little bit too much to the right, it's going to catch that slope and get down there. And I burn the high edge with it. It's one of those accelerated lip outs. And I watch it trickle and trickle and trickle. And it rolls outside his mark by a foot. Wow. And I'm looking at that going, what just happened there? I mean, I had done all the right things. So there's nobody there but us and the rules official. And he's just getting this show. I make it. And then he makes it. So we go to number nine, which was a fun par four. It goes downhill, uphill, perched green, flag to the right over a bunker, bunker behind the green. He hits it, one bounces it in the back bunker. I hit it in there about, I don't know, 15, 20 feet right of the flag. Big right to left break, like 3-4 feet of break. He hits it out of the bunker to like a foot. I make the putt for birdie, beat him in the playoff. He doesn't get in an event the rest of the year, Chris.
Oh.
By the end of the following year, he had retired from the game.
Oh, wow.
That's what tour life is like. Now, yeah. Like I said, great guy, friendly with each other, but competition's competition. There's no give.
Yeah.
There's no give. And, you know, what? Once again, story from being out there and coming through in the big moments, the clutch genes. I mean,
yep,
those moments. You know, one of the rounds I'm most proud of is at Q School one year. And I know a lot of guys that can't get through first stage of Q School that I think are way better than I am. I made it through first stage every year, but one year we're playing in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the third round, and the weather wasn't good any of the rounds, but the third round is 55. It's blowing, I don't know, 15 miles an hour steady and raining. And it rains the whole round. And I go bogey-free 68 to move from like 28th to like 4th. And it was the second low round of the day. The low round of the day was 67 by a guy from Canada who thought it was warm.
That's
and then
still
the final
brilliant.
Round was played in mediocre weather. I remember sitting in the car that night after 68, getting in. I think I ate at Cracker Barrel. Getting in, had a great meal at Cracker Barrel. I got in the car. I was driving an SUV and it was still windy and the SUV was just rocking when I got in and it was still misty and rainy. Got in and I looked at myself in the rearview mirror and this SUV was just swaying a little. And I looked in the mirror and I went, holy smokes, I am wiped out. And I remember in that moment going, Rob, no, there is no option to be wiped out. You have 18 more holes. You need to negotiate with yourself to find more energy and more life for tomorrow. And I managed to get through the next day. I was 200 and I made a double on number 10 to go back to even. And it was a bad double too. It was a par five. And I just, after that, at that time in my career, I had a little Curtis Strange fire in me. And I remember he's kind of holding the towel over my mouth, you know, talking to myself in some strong terms and going, eight more holes. I want your best eight holes of the week right here. And I played a steady eight coming in. And I think I finished seventh and moved on.
All right. So I got a couple more before I let you go. And speaking of Monday qualifiers and playoffs, I saw the post that you put out on your Instagram page from a video from back in 1993 where the local news in Knoxville interviewed you as you were waiting to be a part of a 9-way playoff during a Monday qualifier for the tournament there on the Korn Ferry Tour. So take us back there. What was it like being in a 9-way playoff?
I was in two of those. No, I was in three of those, Chris.
Really?
We had two full groups or no, we had three threesomes. So that was the first one. And that's a funny story. So first playoff hole was number 10. And there's nine of us. And I draw the number one. And it's just a giant crowd around the tee with nine guys and a couple caddies and stuff. And it was a driver up to a plateau that he played down to the green. And I remember I took driver out and teed my ball, walked back in my routine, took a practice swing and took a divot. I wasn't nervous.
We've all done it.
I just took a divot, started laughing, loosened everybody up, but hit in the fairway. That's a front right flag, and I overcut it, and it took a bounce down to the right, and I chipped it up there, missed the putt, made bogey. So I was a one-hole playoff guy there. What was the next one? The next one was down in Texas. I missed the cut in Wichita, went down in Texas, shoot 66. And I'm in another 9-way playoff. And so I get up there, and the first hole is this hard par four. It's like 480, dogleg right, and draw number one. And at that time, I'd come up with the mindset of playoffs. And everybody that's listening, if you're ever in a playoff or in a head-to-head, I want you to think this thought. Look at everybody else around you and go, you're more nervous than me. You're more nervous than me. You're way more nervous than me. You're scared out of your mind. I used to do that. And I made everybody standing there more nervous than me. And it made me calmer. But I got up there a little amped on this long par four and just smoked a drive. And I had a little downhill lie in the fairway. And I was between clubs. And it was a dog leg. So when it turned, I had a little tailwind. And I remember going, okay, tour player trick here on this downslope. Bump it back in your stance an inch, take the shorter club that would be the right number, that because it's longer, I needed an in-between club, and hit it. And bumping it back, de-lofted it a little more on the slope, little tailwind, and I just peered this 8-iron in there off this downslope. So it flew like a strong 7-iron, and it went in there about 3 feet, made the putt, only birdie on the hole, moved on. And wow. Then the other one was a sad story. Back when the tour had the Callaway Gardens event, I shot 66 there in a Monday. And it was I don't know if it was nine, it might've been seven, but it was a big group of guys. Drew number one again, hit in the fairway, hit it on the green, hit a good lag putt, missed it. One guy made birdie, made a 30 footer. He got one spot. So now we go on. I think three guys were eliminated. So there's three of us for one spot going to number one. And I hit the ball through the fairway on this par five. And it was on a little pine straw. And I moved a couple of twigs. I got set up to hit it down the fairway because you had a layup. And right when I went to take it back, I saw the logo on the ball tilt.
Oh. Oh,
and I stopped and I went, I did not see that. Did that move? I went, yep, it moved. So I waved the official over and I said, I didn't ground the club because I'm on pine straw, but I saw the ball move. He said, did you move anything around the ball? I said, not around the ball, but there were a couple sticks back here that I moved that I thought I might bump on my backswing, but nothing around the ball. He goes, nope, penalty. I said, okay, hang on. I don't doubt that you're right or wrong here, but I want a second ruling because you're always entitled to a second ruling. Second ruling is always binding. So he called the other official over. I re-explained it to him. He said, penalty, fine, played out, played to the green, made bogey, goodbye.
Wow. Brutal. But you know what?
But you know what?
Your integrity is intact.
It is. I've got no regrets in that moment.
Yeah. I'm knowing you, I'm sure you absolutely have none. So yep. you did the right thing. It's painful, but that, you know, unfortunately, that's the rules of golf. Sometimes they're painful.
Yeah, that's just the way it goes. And it allows me to tell the story now.
Yeah.
Because if I would have birdied the hole and gotten to the event, I certainly couldn't tell the story and I certainly wouldn't have felt good about playing that event.
Yeah, exactly. Rob, one more before I let you go. And like I mentioned in your intro, your golf school is down there in Destin, Florida. You had the grand opening a few weeks ago back on May 2nd. You've got a beautiful indoor studio that just looks absolutely amazing that comes complete with our friend and fitness expert, Courtney Weber. Talk about what you've got available down there and why people need to come see you as quickly as possible.
Well, we've got the most high-tech indoor golf training facility for about 200 miles. If you go west from us, you're going to run into Rob Noel and Brian Manzella. You go north, you'll get to Mark Blackburn in Birmingham. You go to Atlanta, you've got some guys up there, especially John Tattersall. Heading east, you're probably going to run into Travis Fulton in Jacksonville. And they'll have something that'll match our stuff. But we've got the Motion to Coach AI software, which is the most high-tech swing analyzing software on the planet. We've got the Motion to Coach Studio. We just had the WellPutt Big Tilt Max platform put in for putting today, which is as great as it gets for putting. FlightScope launch monitor data. We've got everything we need indoors to make a player better. And then if we want to go outside, we've got a golf course right across the street. We go outside and we've got a golf course with the best playing corridors in the panhandle of Florida. Most of the courses down here are pretty broad shoulders. You don't really learn to hit it straight and the greens are big. The course across the street from us, some of the holes, the trees on the right side touch the trees on the left. And if you twitch at all, you're going to hit a tee shot that goes 100 yards and strikes a tree. So we can teach you to hit some straight tee shots and hit into some very small greens. So we've got a great spot, regardless of in, out, rain, shine. It's like I joke, it's always 71 degrees at my indoor studio. You don't need sunscreen and you don't need bug spray.
That's fantastic.
But, you know, Chris, I want to touch on something real quick.
Sure.
Because that's in the news today. Did you see they altered the FedEx Cup championship again?
I did, as a matter of fact. So I'm curious how it's going to play out.
I've got the fix for that whole thing.
Okay.
This is how you fix it. And this would be so cool and so much fun. So you got your 30 guys there. Here's what you do. Here's how you conduct the four-round event there. You play two rounds. You cut to the low 20. Exactly. So it means there's a tie, there's a playoff. So 36 holes, cut to 20 players. Right there. Boom.
Yep.
Think about how exciting a playoff would be on a Friday afternoon or Friday evening to get to play the Saturday round at the FedEx Cup Championship.
Right. Okay? Yep.
Saturday, 18 more holes, 54 holes. Cut again, low 10. No tie. To play Sunday for the FedEx Cup.
I like it.
36 holes Sunday.
Ooh.
10 twosomes. You repair every 9 by FedEx Cup points. Mm. So you're always staring at the guy that's got the most points.
Yeah.
You play 36 holes, final 9 holes, everybody that's paired knows exactly where they stand. and you're staring at the guy in the final group for the FedEx Cup.
Wow. I like it. I like it because I'm curious. They haven't got down to the nitty gritty, right? We learned that it's just going to be stroke play 72-hole tournament.
Yeah.
Well, if you're down to the 30 guys, can the 30th player win the FedEx Cup just because he won that tournament? That still doesn't seem fair to me.
No, it doesn't seem fair to the guy that's carried the points all year.
Right.
You keep doing the points like they did before. Carry them over. You have points every day now. So you have points through the first two rounds, points after the third round, and points after every nine holes in the final.
Yeah. I like it. I like it. And I'm interested to hear changing, how it goes.
It's changing on the scoreboard. You keep track of it. You know, this guy's up by 2 points. This guy's up by five. And you know, you're paying all the places, you know, by where they're finished in the FedEx Cup. And that's fluid the whole way.
Yeah. No, I like it. I think you're onto something there, Rob.
That's what I do. I think that sounds incredibly intriguing. And I think the guys would like the head-to-head, you know, two-man, you know, pairings looking at each other for the whole deal.
Yeah, I think you're right. We'll see how they actually do it, but I think you're on to something. I like what you're saying.
If I'm commissioner, I go, here's the deal. Boom. I say, hey, like the big guy in the White House, DT's doing, here's my executive order. It's time.
I love it. Rob, before I let you go, remind our listeners again how they can stay up to date with the great things you're out there doing, whether it's on your website, it's on YouTube, or it's on social media.
Well, we have our YouTube page for the Golf Kingdom TV show. All the shows are still there, so you can go and binge watch what was a fun 6 years of shows that we did. So at that YouTube, The Golf Kingdom. On Instagram, I'm also there under Golf Kingdom. You can keep up with me there on Instagram. We have a Facebook page now, Strano Golf Academy there. So you can follow Strano Golf Academy on the Facebook page. And then at stranogolf.com, we've got a new website coming here June 1st, updating everything, news feed there to keep track of what our players are doing and what's going on in the inner workings of Strano Golf here in the Panhandle of Florida, Niceville, Florida, to be exact, on the north side of Choctahatchee Bay. And, we're just having fun being indoors. We got, just like I said, such great tech. We're not guessing how to make players better. We're making them better. We're making them better fast. And having fun while we're doing it, Chris.
No doubt you are. Rob, I can't thank you enough for taking time out of your night to come back and be a part of the show. You're always fantastic and make every segment that you've ever been a part of so much fun for me to be a part of as well. This was the 23rd time we've got an opportunity to spend time with you. I'm already looking forward to number 24, my friend.
That sounds great. Thank you for opportunity 23, and I'm glad I could just be normal throughout it.
Indeed. You're the best, my friend. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
Thanks. Bless you, brother. Talk soon.
You bet. See you, Rob.
Bye.
That is the great Rob Strano, folks. Again, you can find him on the YouTube channel, Golf Kingdom. Look that up, Strano Golf Academy and stranogolf.com. I tell you what, folks, I've had, you know, obviously 23 times here on the show. Rob and I have spent time together in person at his golf academy a few years ago. We have spent time together at the PGA merchandise show. Everything about the man just oozes positivity. That's one of the great things I love about Rob. I mean, you already know what a great golf instructor he is. So he's going to help you with your golf swing. He's going to help you with your strategy. He's going to help you play better. And like you said, he's going to do it fast now that he's got all the toys and bells and whistles there at his brand new golf academy. But on top of that, he's going to get your mind right, and he's going to make you feel good about yourself while you're doing it. Everything about what Rob does in his instruction or when you're interacting with him is always positive. Rob is a magnet when you get to a place like the PGA Merchandise Show. And there's tens of thousands of people all over the floor going hither and yon. Everybody knows Rob. Why? Because he's a great guy. That's where it all starts with. Rob's a great human being. And then from there, everything about the golf flows. But you can't just walk 10 feet without someone knowing Rob. Rob knows this guy. This guy knows Rob. I mean, it's a thing to behold when you're at a PGA merchandise show. But then on top of that, right, he's just going to make your golf game better. So it's a win-win all the way around. I love Rob. He's a great friend. He's been so good to me over the years. Again, you don't come on the show 23 times. Give that time to somebody else. without just being a wonderful human being. So go see Rob. Go down and check out the great new golf academy he has. If you're anywhere around the Florida Panhandle, you can't lose by going to see Rob. He's going to make everything about your golf game better. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this edition of Next on the Tee. I want to send out my sincere thanks again to Tom Patrick, Mark Wiebe, and Rob Strano for joining me this week. Scheduled to join me next week are Jason Carbone, head golf professional at Canterbury Golf Club. We'll be back. We'll get our regular monthly visit from the confidence doctor, Dr. Bob Winters, and former PGA Tour pro turned top orthopedic surgeon, Bill Mallon, will be here as well. So, folks, it's going to be an amazing show. I hope you'll come back and be a part of it with us. I want to thank our friends again over at the Okay, now back and next on the tee with me is the confidence doctor, Dr. Bob Winters. Doc is our guy who helps us think differently and play smarter out on the golf course. You can find him down in Orlando at his performance enhancement company. He is the resident sports psychologist at the Ledbetter Golf Academy at the Reunion Resort. Works with players ranging all the way from junior golfers to players all the way up on both professional tours. He's recently been named a board member of the NXXT Tour, which is a feeder tour to the Epson and LPGA Tours. And I couldn't be more excited we get to have him back with us again this week here on Next on the Tee. Dr. Bob, how are you, my friend?
Chris, I'm doing great. And I have, you know, just something I want to throw across your desk, because I know you are just a rabid Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And I saw this the other day, and I can't remember where I was. I think I was in Hawaii, and I saw this, and it said the Steelers could, you know, under, you know, head coach go 0-6 for the first six games this year. And I'm going, holy cow, we're talking about that here in May. I said, shoot, before we've even gone, I said, I've got to talk to my friend Chris Mascara, because I know he's inside that Pittsburgh Steeler brain trust. So I got to tell you, I mean, I love these prognosticators, you know, the predictors, or say, oh, these people, they're going to go 0-6. Or, I mean, we haven't even really gotten right into, you know, summer training yet, you know, for NFL. That's and they're right. Already talking about, you know, these people are going to go 0-6. Or it's just, you know, all of this huff and puff, you know, before we have these big events. And we see it almost every week on the PGA and LPGA Tour. We hear all of the golf, you know, channel analysts, all of the ESPN analysts talking about who's hot, who's not. And, you know, people always ask me, what do you think about this stuff? And I'm going, well, I'm going to talk about it, you know, with my great friend, Chris Mascaro, next on the tee. But I wanted to bring that to you. Now, so if I asked you, how are your Steelers going to be this year? Just give it to me, baby. Lay it on me. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Doc, I mean, we haven't even gotten to training camp yet. So, you know, who knows, right? I mean, best case scenario with OTAs, you're going to see guys out there in T-shirts and shorts, and that you can't really evaluate the talent you got. But here's what I will say. I'm very excited about this season. Now, you know, whether we're going to go 0-6 or not, I mean, I don't know how anyone can say that, because you don't know what team is going to be there yet. There's still free agents out there to be signed. There's still these rookies that we don't know if they're going to be great or not. But I'm very excited about Will Howard, the quarterback we drafted in the sixth round out of Ohio State. Kid just won a national championship there. It's funny, I had John Cook on the show a couple of months ago prior to the draft and shortly after the national championship, and he was singing the praises of Will Howard. And I said, you know what? He would look good in the black and gold. And he said, you guys would get a great one if you took that kid. And then lo and behold, you know, Cookie's right. We go out there and we get this kid. And I just love everything about him. I already got my Will Howard jersey, Doc. That's how excited I am about this kid. So
yeah, I saw that on one of your Instagram blasts. Yep. I think you had it. You said, this is my quarterback. I said, yep. All right. Fantastic. Yep. Well, good for you.
That guy's my quarterback.
Well, I got to tell you something about John Cook, too. You know, Cookie, I've known Cookie for years. Obviously, I played for Ball State. He played for Ohio State a few years after me. And I had a great chance to work with his son, you know, and mental training. And John Cook and his wife, his family, just really one of the class acts in golf. I mean, I put the 100%. John Cook family, the Justin Rose family. I mean, there are just some real class acts out there in the world of golf. And just really, really glad, you know, call Cookie a great friend.
Yeah, same here. So, Doc, you mentioned Hawaii a moment ago. I'm jealous as I could possibly be that you've recently taken a trip out to Hawaii. Talk about what brought you out there.
Well, here's what happened. I had a brother-in-law, my sister, Betsy, she lost her husband, Ray, and he had gone through a very prolonged illness. And my brother, Bill, my oldest brother, I have two older brothers and an older sister. I'm the youngest. And I think when you're the youngest of the family, no matter how many degrees you have, how many years you have on behind your belt, you're still the baby, right? You'll always be the baby in the birth order. And I told, my sister, I said, listen, you haven't seen, brother Bill in about, 8-9 years. And I had never been, out to see him. He lives on the island of Kauai, which is the Garden Island. And a lot of people who go out to Hawaii think it is the absolute most beautiful island, of all the islands in the Pacific. And so my wife, April, took my sister, Betsy, and myself. We all went out to see my brother, Bill. Now, what Bill does, he has designed and kind of created this whole new golf community out there on Kauai. And it's a big, men's group. And I was out there giving, some clinics to his men's group. And then we played at Waialu Golf Course. So they've had 3 or 4 USGA Public Links championships out there. An absolute gorgeous, piece of property right there, right on the ocean. And it reminded me so much, of Pebble Beach. But some of the holes, I think, were even more glorious than Pebble Beach. It was just a real diamond in the rough. And we played Pukia, golf club. So we played, some golf out there. We played a lot of games, had a lot of family stuff going on. But Chris, I really want to tell all of our listeners that Dr. Bob Winters did face his fear. One of the fears I had was I wanted to see the island, not from a hiking perspective or out in a boat or catamaran or surf or whatever, and kind of done some of those things before at other venues. So I said, I'm going to go on a helicopter ride. But not an ordinary helicopter ride. I kind of did my Tom Cruise, the final reckoning here with Dr. Bob. I went in one of these open helicopter rides where they just sort of strap you in and you're kind of looking right down. So I sat behind the pilot, Chris. I mean, I'm right there. And all we have is like a little strap over your shoulder and you've got like a seat belt and it clicks in. And I got to tell you, I might have checked that thing almost OCD. I had some obsessive compulsive disorder, maybe about 10 times. I kept looking at that. I go, is that thing in? Is that thing clicked in? Is that thing? Because you're up there and you're up there about 3,000 to 4,000 feet. And you're kind of going over all these great cliffs and unbelievable valleys going into these volcanoes. And I'm going, wow. But this open door helicopter was fantastic. Had a great guide, had a great helicopter pilot. So I sat right behind him right there at the edge of this open door. And they had sort of like these bus stop, handles that we have like on the trams at the airport. I got to tell you, I had my left hand on that for about the first 10 to 15 minutes so tight that I couldn't really feel the blood in my arms and I'm holding on to my seat. And it was scary. So I faced my fears and got through that. And a lot of people go, it's a helicopter ride. Well, a helicopter ride's one thing, but when you're in these open doors, when you're going about 125 miles an hour and you're sort of lurching and turning up and down, even though it was very, very smooth, the pilot very capable. But, when you look down, you're sitting there going, hey, I've just got a little piece of metal protecting me from mortality here. So that's, kind of whoo. But I got to tell you what you don't see. And really, when people go to the island, the Garden Island of Kauai, and I would recommend it highly, and I haven't been paid any promotional dollars to say this, but only 20% of the island people can get to. The other 80% of the island, which is absolutely so majestic, so natural, they've filmed so many movies out there, over 125 different movies, and all of the Jurassic Park movies are actually filmed there. And so you are going back in time. And when you go down over these mountains, these green, lush jungle mountains, and then they're rugged, and then you see hundreds of unbelievable waterfalls that you would never have ever seen before. I mean, almost like Victoria Falls. They're just, thousands of feet long. And then you go over to what they call the Hawaiian Grand Canyon, and it looks like the Grand Canyon. And then you go on the Nepali coastline. It's beautiful, and it's just where earth, sea, and sky meet. And it's just, you have to believe that there is, you know, a God out there, a Mother Nature that just created something so majestic. You overuse the word beautiful, majestic, glorious. So when I came back and I saw my sister and she asked me how it was, I said, it was really one of the most thrilling, moving, almost religious experiences I've had for a long time. She said, when I saw you walk up in the parking lot, she said, I was kind of worried because, you know, I was thinking, you know, a lot of these helicopter rides, you know, they don't really talk about a lot of them that do go down. And if they go down, because I know there's just one here, God bless them, that went down here about 3 or 4 months ago. And it wasn't any pilot error. It was just something that happened in, you know, the helicopter. So when she saw me, she said, you kind of look like Moses in the Ten Commandments that came down, you know, from seeing the burning bush. But it was. I just told her, I said, it was probably one of the greatest things that I had done for myself to do it. So I faced my fears and got through all of that stuff. So that was my Kauai trip. We had such a great time. And thanks for asking. I don't mean to bore the listeners, but you know, you can go fantastic. To Maui, you can go to Oahu or whatever. But the Garden Island of Kauai is fantastic, beautiful golf courses and great deals. I mean, even at the public golf courses, I mean, they have, you know, Princeville that is there and just a lot of, you know, great, great golf courses. So when I see, you know, Mark Roffling the next time I see him, I'm going to tell him, hey, you know, Hawaii does have some unbelievable golf courses. No doubt. Yeah. They really are beautiful. So, Chris, next time, you know, you get a chance, you know, you get out there and we'll hook you up with some great people out there.
I appreciate that very much.
Yeah. You know, so that was Hawaii. So, and then we got back and then we got right back into the saddle here, you know, working with all of our people and our junior golfers, our college golfers, you know, people getting ready to go to PGA America's Q School, and there's other, you know, tournaments going on, and just a lot of wonderful stuff going on.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. And first of all, this is the Women's U.S. Open week, so the ladies are out at Erin Hills in Wisconsin. Nelly Korda, Lydia Ko are the betting favorites. But you know, Doc, I was surprised to see there are 41 girls in the field who are making their U.S. Open debuts, which to me is amazing. The majority of those ladies are amateurs out there. I'm curious to get your thoughts as you look out to the rest of this week there at Erin Hills. What are you looking forward to seeing from these great young ladies?
Well, I mean, Erin Hills is a great venue. You've got, you know, some unbelievable players playing in this. And I'm going to mention, you know, someone, you know, that I'm closely aligned to, and you know, she's one of my players. And her name is Rianne Malixie, and she comes from Manila in the Philippines. And just when I returned back from Hawaii, I was doing her the Big Leap. She created this big junior foundation called the Big Leap, how parents and golf professionals can get their young Filipino golfers on the right track to, you know, big time college scholarships and maybe a professional career. So I had, you know, the pleasure of doing that for like 2 days and talking, you know, to their junior golf, you know, federation in the Philippines. And at the same time, you know, helping Rianne get her mind ready to come here to the USA to get ready to play here in the US Women's Open. So if you don't know Rianne Malixie, she's been one of my players for a number of years and first started with her when she was very young. She's still very young. She's just 18. She's now committed. She's going to be going to Duke University this fall. But this past summer, she won the USGA Junior Amateur Girls Championship. And she also followed that up by winning the USGA Women's Amateur. So she is, you know, the two title holder going into this US Women's Open. And she tees off here on Thursday morning in a pretty, you know, spectacular pairing group. She's playing with two-time U.S. Women's Open champion Yuka Sasso, who was born in the Philippines, and you know, Rianne knows her, but now she's been playing for Japan. And also the great Lydia Ko, who I've known, you know, for a long time and who is just, you know, a real favorite of mine. So I've got Yuka, I've got Rianne, and I've got Lydia, and they're going off early in the morning on number 10. And so I'm very interested in that. But when you talk about some of these, you know, lady amateurs, Chris, listen, the only thing, you know, about them being amateur, they're big time players. And by the time they get, you know, to something like this, they're already pretty tough crusted veterans. They know how to play. They know, you know, what, you know, the deal is. But, you know, when you start talking, like Jim McKay used to say on, you know, TV broadcast years ago, U.S. Open, it tends to put a little bit more pressure on you. So that's one of the things that I'm trying to get Rianne and all of my players to understand is that first and foremost, let's get the stargazing done. Let's get the, you know, the fanfare done. We understand that it's important. And one of the things that Rianne did, and I don't know if I sent you a picture, but she had a practice round the other day with Nellie Korda and a couple of the other girls. And I look at Nellie and I look at Rianne. Rianne's only got to be about, like, what, 4 foot 11, 5 foot? And you got Nellie, you know, who's kind of, you know, statuesque or whatever. So it's sort of like, looks like the old cartoon of Mutt and Jeff, you know, big Enos, big Enos, little Enos, you know. But she said, you know, Nellie couldn't have been, you know, any nicer and just very gracious. And she really loves playing with a lot of these players because she's really tapping into their intelligentsia, into their minds and how they see certain shots. And that's how you grow. And I think I really believe that Rianne will do very, very well. You know, she's this past year, she's been having a few little, you know, back spasms, you know, I think her growing pains and things like that, but she's on some, you know, wonderful therapy and she feels strong. So I'm going to keep, you know, both fingers crossed and, you know, sending her out some good thoughts to Rianne. But I think there's some great names, you know, if you just go down that list, I mean, it's unbelievable, all the different great players that are playing this year. So this is going to be, and I've always loved the U.S. Women's Open. I've been there, you know, several times with different players over the years. And guys, I mean, people like Julieta Granada and Michelle Wee and people like that, Rachel Hetherington. I mean, just through the years, there have been some fantastic people I've been associated with. But I think the U.S., you know, Women's Open, it's just a wonderful event. And what I find, I mean, hey, if you've got a hot hand, anybody can win. And one of, you know, my players, you know, when I, you know, years ago was Birdie Kim, and I was out there at Cherry Hills when Birdie, you know, chipped in that last hole for Birdie. And I remember, you know, everybody thought, my goodness, where did she come from? But she had come, you know, from, you know, the middle of the pack, and it's great because Morgan Pressel was right there in the fairway, thinking that she had, you know, this tournament won. And Birdie Kim actually, you know, chipped in on her from the sand. And so that was, you know, one of my first U.S. Women's Open champions, you know, that I mentored. And because she was working with David Ledbetter and myself at the time. So, yeah, it's like anybody can win, you know. And I've always loved what Lee Trevino said, Chris. Hey, he said, somebody's got to win this thing. It might as well be me. So that's kind of really what I'm kind of putting into all of my players. Hey, if you're in the tournament, if you're in the race, you've got a chance. If you're not there, you can't win. So, and if you are there, you know, I don't care if you're one in a thousand, at least you've got that one chance. Let's take full opportunity of it.
For sure. And Doc, you know, you mentioned how it's different at a U.S. Open. It's different playing in a U.S. Open and a major. And typically, USGA sets up those courses very difficult. Rough is usually very deep. Greens are running extremely fast. It's on some level a war of attrition because the mental part of the game becomes even more important at a U.S. Open. Talk about working with your players on being patient, accepting adversity, staying focused, and kind of staying in the moment because you can have a bad hole and you can have a bad shot because obviously the rough gets very, very deep. I know with the U.S. Open at Oakmont, talking to my friends up there, the rough there is already at 6 inches and we still got about a week and a half of growing time. So but talk about, you know, hey, sometimes you just got to accept your medicine. Don't get out of, you know, your game plan and staying focused when it's very easy to get frustrated when you're dealing with those kinds of conditions?
Yeah, Chris, you bring up a great point, because that is the number one term. When we start talking golf, and we start talking the majors, and especially U.S. Open, that is the one term that gets thrown around more than trust, more than confidence, more than, you know, playing your game. It's about being patient. And so many golfers, I would say 99.9% of the recreational golfers, don't really understand what that word really means. But patience really is defined as the capacity to accept or tolerate delays, trouble, or suffering without getting angry or upset. I mean, that right there is just, you know, a whole mouthful. But the whole point of it is, it's the capacity to accept or tolerate delays, frustration, trouble, suffering. And so when players get an unfortunate bounce, or they feel like they've given a shot away, or they've had an unfortunate three putt, or the ball doesn't stop, you know, in the middle of the green, and it starts rolling and rolling, and it rolls off, you know, the green, they sit there and go, wow. So they could get angry. They could chuck, and chucking is a term that I created. It means you have an emotional fallout. You get upset and you take your trash with you from one shot to another. And it takes you about two or three holes to actually recover and create some type of emotional equilibrium. So we don't want to have a bunch of chuckers out there, but that's what patience is. And I've said this in many of my books, and this is a Dr. Bob Winters. It's a Dr. Bobism. Is that patience is confidence waiting to happen, meaning that if you can just stand, you know, and stay in that little bubble of just being cool, composed, and confident, and say, you know what, everyone is going to be tested, everyone's going to be challenged, and bad things are going to happen to everyone. If I could be the one player who keeps my cool, who keeps my equilibrium, who doesn't get knocked off balance, who doesn't feel like I have to get it back or I have to force something, if I can just hang in there and just, you know, create more opportunities, then everything's going to work out. And if we think about Scottie Scheffler, and a lot of people think Scottie Scheffler has, you know, perhaps one of the greatest mindsets, but Scottie has this infinite patience. And he was talking about, you know, some of the mud balls that they had, you know, at their recent tournament. And he said, I didn't allow, you know, the mud balls or the unfortunate, you know, circumstances to affect me. Because if I did, I would have carried that into 5, 6, 7, 8 shots. He goes, but I didn't. You know, I just kind of hung in there, played my game, and just said, you know what? I have to accept it. And acceptance, it is not, you know, sort of what I call a defensive term or a weak term. To accept something is to say it's neutral, it's objective, it's cold. I mean, it's kind of an indifferent term. But when you say I accept, you're saying the result, it is what it is. And I can tolerate it, I can put it behind me, and I can move forward. Because if you don't accept something, if you really have a grudge, or you just, you know, get upset, and you get, for lack of a better word, just pissed off, you know, tell you what, that pistivity, that's a word I created, by the way, that pistivity carries over into several follow-up shots, and you keep screwing up. What it is, you're taking your trash, you know, from shot to shot. Instead of playing the game of golf, you're playing emotional garbage. So we need to quit being garbage collectors, and we need to start playing the game of golf. And that's something we can learn, you know, both from the ladies and the men. The best players, you know, in the world, the best players at your club, the best players who are taking $5 off of you every Saturday morning are probably the people who aren't getting upset and will let a shot go and will stay patient and will tolerate the little frustrations. And they'll actually persevere. They show a little bit of grit. They'll show a little bit of resilience. And they actually keep moving forward. And that's really why patience is so important, because you're going to be tested. And it's the USGA. They set it up so that every part of your game, the physical part, the emotional part, the mental part, gets tested. And I tell you what, that's the whole point. You know, and that's why the greens are so tough at the U.S. Open, because the fine motor perceptual skill of putting really tests a person's patience. You know, the little three-footer that you miss and it turns into a six-footer because you hit it just a little bit too much authority and it slides by. And that's where the three and four, you know, four putts start come from. They come from people getting upset. They overreact. And they don't calm themselves down or compose themselves immediately to get into the next putt. So, you know, patience right there is, you know, our sermon for the day. I mean, because if you don't have patience, okay, you can't be a good doctor. Doctors have to have a lot of patience, and they have to make house calls. And golfers have to have a lot of patience as well, Chris.
100%. You're not winning an Open if you don't have patience.
That's right.
Doc, one more before I let you go. And you've got a couple other junior players that are out there racking up wins. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about Alexandra Young and Ariana Lau.
Yeah, Alexandra Young is a wonderful young lady from upstate New York, from Woodstock, New York, right where we had, you know, the great, you know, Woodstock, you know, Music Fest years and years ago. And, you know, she's really has just blossomed into this wonderful 17, 18-year-old, you know, wonderful junior player. And she just won, you know, this Section 9, the New York State, Pennsylvania Golf Association sectional, district and sectional championship. She's now going to the state finals. She shot 74-74 over like about a seven-day period. That's how they do it up there. And they had tough conditions both days. So she ends up winning by five shots. So Alexandra, who has worked very hard. And over this winter, we did a lot of Zoom calls, a lot of virtual coaching. And she's just a great student. And it's just, again, another junior player who just realizes the importance of getting your mind in the right place. And I've got another player like right now, I mean, we're, you know, actually, you know, doing this recording is Ariana Lau, who is, you know, from Hong Kong, who is now in the lead and is seeking her third consecutive title in the Asia Pacific Golf Confederation Championships, you know, the women's, you know, ladies division, the girls division. And she won it in 2023, 2024. And it was funny because she was talking to me just the other day before, you know, she teed it up in her first round. And she said, "What should I expect? And what should I be thinking?" She goes, "All of the reporters and all the news people, because over there it's one of the biggest, you know, ladies amateur tournaments, you know, in the world. And if you win that, you get, you know, I think an automatic exemption into the Augusta National Ladies Amateur, which Ariana played this year as well." And I said, "Well, the first thing, Ariana, is that you have the confirmation that you've done it before. You've done it, you know, 2023, you've done it 2024. But you're not the same person. This isn't the same tournament. And no one's going to come into your house and take away your titles. So this whole notion about I need to defend my title or defend my titles, let's put that away. Let's put up the defense. Let's put that and park that. Let's go on the offense. Let's say I'm hungry. I want to win this year. I want to win 2025. And that's really what I would tell anybody who really wants to go out and play great golf. If you had a great round yesterday, well, that was yesterday. You know, that's history. That's a done deal. That's George Washington. But today is a new day. Let's be hungry. Let's go out, you know, let's not rest on our laurels of what we've done. I mean, this is a whole new day." And like I've always told, you know, my players, I said, you know, for me, performance is like a pizza and like a pizza maker. You're only as good as your last performance. And today is a whole brand new pizza. We've got to make a whole new pie today. So let's go out and be a good baker. Let's make some pies and let's do it one and eat the damn thing one bite at a time. You know? So I like to do a lot of metaphors, a lot of analogies, Chris, you know, when I'm talking to my players. Hopefully they understand what I'm saying. They seem to. They're
no
doing
doubt.
Pretty well.
Indeed.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Dr. Bob, before I let you go, remind our listeners again, how can they come see you? How can they get copies of your books and also follow you out there on social media?
Well, you know, they can see me on Instagram and Facebook at Robert Winters or Dr. Bob Winters. They can find me on Google. I've been around for a long time. You can actually find me at my website, theconfidencedoctor.com, or you can go into davidledbetter.com and find me at the David Ledbetter Golf Zone World Headquarters here at Reunion Resort in Orlando. And I'm always, you know, looking forward, you know, to meeting new people and taking on, you know, new students. And like I tell you, you know, Chris, as we've said so many times, the moment you change your mind, you change your game. And that's the great thing about this game of golf and the game of life. Every day is new. Every day is different, creates different opportunities, different challenges. But if you've got an optimistic, you know, viewpoint, you've got your mind in the right place, there's no telling where you can go.
Absolutely. Doc, it's always a privilege to get to spend some time with you. I can't thank you enough for coming back and being a part of this week's show. You're fantastic, my friend. And we get the privilege of having you in back-to-back weeks. So I'm looking forward to doing it again next week.
Well, fantastic. And here's something I learned in Hawaii. You know, aloha means hello and goodbye. And the Mai Tai is $35. Okay. So mahalo for thanking you for having me on, you know, Chris. So I look forward to seeing you next week. All right, my friend.
Same here. Take care, Dr. Bob. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
You too. Bye-bye now.
See you, Doc. Bye. That is a great Dr. Bob Winters. Again, you can follow him on social media at Dr. Bob Winters on Instagram and Twitter, online at theconfidencedoctor.com. And like it says on his Instagram page, for those who want to win, get in touch with Dr. Bob. If you go back and listen to the segments that Doc has been a part of, and this is, I believe, the 17th time I've had the privilege of spending time with him. Like I say, I always keep a little notebook. I always jot down some notes, right? You listen to those nuggets. And this notebook that I have, and I'm holding it up as if there was a camera here, but I have that. And what I jotted down this week is my entries from what Dr. Bob shared with us, right? Patience is confidence waiting to happen. How great is that, right? Keep reminding yourself of that. And then positivity, right? Let's not have that, right? We want to be positivity. So we want positive vibes only. And then don't take your trash with you from shot to shot. Those things resonate with me because we do it all the time, right? We hit a bad shot, we hang our heads, we get mad, we slam a club, do whatever it is we're going to do. And now we've taken that negative thought into the next shot. And then we play that shot badly. So instead of taking our medicine, which is kind of what we talked about with respect to some of the things that he is talking to his young players about, so taking your medicine, take your bogey, maybe you have to take a double in a U.S. Open. Sometimes you got to take a triple, but you know what? You put that in the rear view and go on to the next shot and go make yourself a birdie or a par and try to work your way back from that. That's how the patience and the great things end up happening. So don't take your trash from shot to shot. Doc is fantastic. I look forward to having him back on the show with me again next week. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this edition of Next on the Tee. I want to send out my sincere thanks again to Tom Patrick, Mark Wiebe, Rob Strano, and Dr. Bob Winters for joining me this week. Scheduled to join me next week are Jason Carbone, head golf professional from Canterbury Golf Club, will be back. We'll get our regular monthly visit from the Confidence Doctor, Dr. Bob Winters. And then former PGA Tour pro turned top orthopedic surgeon Bill Mallon will be back as well. So folks, it's going to be an amazing show. I hope you'll come back and be a part of it with us. I want to thank our friends again over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review for hosting this show on their site. For coverage of everything going on in Western Pennsylvania, including your favorite sports, go to triblive.com. You can find the show by then clicking on the sports section tab, and you're going to find the most recent episode right there for you on the homepage of the sports section. Or you can click on sports and then podcast network. Then you'll see the Next on the Tee logo. If you click on that, then many of the most recent episodes from the season are going to be available front and center for you right there. You can also find the show over on Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, GolfNewsNet.com. Pretty much anywhere you get your podcast content, we're probably on that site as well. And as always, my sincere thanks to the wonderful folks over at Good Pods for making this show one of their recommended podcasts. So please download the free app and stream your favorite podcast right there from your favorite device. But like I say each and every week, my sincere thanks go out to all of you for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate each and every one of you so very much. Until next week, hit 'em straight, my friends.